Welcome to the Retail Inside Out podcast from Retail Gazette. In each episode, we take a deeper look at the news, trends, and personalities who are shaping the future of our industry. I'm your host, Matt Ridout, and this week we're focusing on a topic very close to my heart, marketing. How can retailers adapt to changing consumer needs, maximize their channels, and crucially, make their messaging cut through a really noisy marketplace? To help us answer these questions and more, I'm thrilled to be joined by Simon Moore, Director of Marketing and Media from Dreams, this year's Retail Gazette Awards Marketing Game Changer category winner. Thanks for joining us, Simon.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Also lending his considerable insight in the marketing arena is Andy Houston, Chief Commercial Officer for Crimtan. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you also for having me.
So I think it's best to start with Dreams. And, you know, one of the things that obviously a lot of people who are listening will be aware of is that you are partnered with Team GB in Paralympics GB. Now, this is a massive deal. How did this come about and why were you convinced it was the right fit for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So we probably go back to about 2019, which is when we sort of first signed the deal with Team GB. Paralympics GB came on sometime later. I think it was probably in one of the lockdowns. But our approach to both partnerships was very, very considered. Equally, it was the first time we'd entered into the sporting arena on this scale. In the past, we had worked with sporting celebs to produce content, but never at this level. At the time, we still had a really strong objective, which was to cement our sleep-related credentials. It's always been a known fact that if you sleep better, you perform better, whether you're on the field or in the office. So by partnering with Team GB and Paralympics GB, we represented the pinnacle of performance. We could use this to leverage our credentials. The strategic thought that we had at the time was sleep equals performance, and the principle which we tied up in our relationship was the official sleep partner.
I guess when you started that partnership, did you have that campaign in mind? Was it something that you had planned going into, like, right, this makes complete sense for Dreams to be doing this?
I mean, strategically, we knew the idea was to focus on our sleep credentials, but in reality, what we were going to do had to be borne out of the beginnings. And in fairness, right at the start, we didn't know how our plan was going to lay down. And reality was that we had one plan, but then we hit COVID and Tokyo was delayed a year. So what we had was all thrown out, and literally the season when it was all starting again, even come March, we didn't know whether the Tokyo was going to happen in 21. So it was almost a case, once we got the green light from the partners, it was like, okay, all systems go. And it was good because it applied pressure, but it also meant that we had to deliver a lot in a very, very short window of time. So yeah, it was challenging. And I think that the more you talk to the partners, and it's worth saying that both Paralympics GB and Team GB are exceptional to work with. They help drive a lot of the ideas and the thought processes. Once you start to work in that space, the ideas do start to flow. As long as it always ladders back to the sleep credentials and sleep, power and performance, we were fine.
And I suppose with such a big investment, obviously there's going to be so much focus on what you're doing both internally and externally from your customers and from, you know, also from a business point of view. How did you ensure that the campaign delivered?
Yeah, well, trying to remember now the exact timings. During the campaign planning, we put in a series of KPIs. Our real focus was to deliver on a number of brand metrics. And, you know, those brand metrics are what we thought we could easily measure the difference. And the way we measured this was those exposed and those not exposed. So, for example, how Dreams drives is leaders in sleep. Dreams helps Team GB's performance. So we put a series of metrics in place, and we measured ourselves against those metrics. We have regular brand tracking, so we measure that on a monthly basis. And we see where we sit within that. Yes, we do have traditional metrics like ROI, where we'll work with third-party partners to measure our kind of metrics and so on and so forth. And we made sure that those metrics were all achieving what we needed it to achieve. I mean, it's worth noting that overall, our awareness on the campaign was 81% of people who were aware believed Dreams were the sleep experts. And then first choice consideration had a 21% percentage point build on top of what those weren't aware. So the campaign really did deliver on that basis.
That's amazing. Those are amazing numbers. I mean, I think any marketing campaign would be delighted to achieve that kind of lift. Andy, turning to you, I mean, since we're talking about, campaigns delivering for brands, how can retailers make sure that big campaigns are delivering online? I mean, what advice would you give to a retailer who's saying, you know, what can we do to help improve our marketing?
As Grimtan, we sit in the programmatic advertising and data solutions arena. So our kind of credentials are very much about ensuring that we can leverage the vast amount of data that's available to try and deliver the right insights. And I think, you know, Simon really hit the nail on the head, is the fact that the retailers that we work with take a very holistic approach to planning, targeting and measurement. Because I think the concept of a linear purchase funnel is really dead, as customers, you know, tend to engage now more with brands on multiple levels across multiple devices in multiple locations. So it's not about a single set of metrics. It's more about looking at all the different channels that you're trying to engage the customer with and picking performance indicators for each, and then wrapping those up and laddering those up, as Simon said. With our clients, we like going measurement first. The good news for most retailers is that most retail purchases include some sort of digital interaction. So that doesn't necessarily mean the final purchase, but lots of other engagement signals that build up to a purchase, whether that is online or offline. So even in these very broad engagements, these broad marketing engagements, as long as you're putting your ear to the proverbial digital ground, and listening, whether that's brand metrics, brand cut through, as Simon mentioned, you can start seeing the success of campaigns before that final purchase.
I was just going to add to Andy's point. I mean, it's very good, because it's far too often people will run campaigns and they're just not possible to measure. You'll often hear about different media channels, and you talk about running on different executions. But if you can't measure it, then what is the point in even going down there? How do you know if it's worked? And I think that as an advertiser or a marketeer, whichever term you wish to use, it's really important to take a step back and always ask yourself, is what I'm doing measurable? And then what does good look like? And if you can't achieve either of those, move on. Don't waste your money.
One of the things that I think was really interesting about what you were saying, Simon, is, you know, obviously you were looking for brand awareness and recognition, and those kind of metrics as a key driver for what you were doing in your partnership. And, you know, that's really because a lot of people will tend to go, well, did this action equal an extra sale? But those kind of things are often kind of pushed to one side, maybe by, from a business case. And I think they're super important, because that's the thing that builds affinity with a brand.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, as a commercial organization, any big investment warrants a financial return. And it is sometimes the most difficult part to stretch apart, particularly when you're in post-COVID or COVID years, when, you know, in the press, there was a lot of pent-up demand. You'd read about consumer economy was doing this. It's really, really hard. But equally, I think you do need a full rounded view. You know, what's it doing to my brand? How is my brand, by doing this, changing perceptions? And then if you can measure the financial return on the backside, whether it's unit sales or total sales, then I think you've got it wrapped up.
I suppose this is a question for both of you. And it's a difficult question to answer, because looking for a one size fits all answer on this is completely useless, because it depends. I mean, we've talked about, certainly in the dreams case, you had a certain number of key metrics that you were looking at that were appropriate for your business and for the campaign that you're running. But if you were thinking about, in general, campaigns, what are the key metrics that you think are always useful for retailers to be using to measure their marketing campaigns? Andy, if I start with you first.
Unfortunately, as you say, it's not really a one-size-fits-all. I mean, I think if we agree that the base assumption of a holistic approach to measurement, then you need to take a holistic approach to the customer lifecycle. So, you know, different metrics will be important at different stages of that customer lifecycle. And as I said, there's not a linear customer lifecycle anymore. It's lots of different touch points, and different channels will positively impact that whole customer lifecycle in different ways at different stages of that lifecycle. So, you know, the metrics for broader type activities, such as, you know, the sponsorship, as an example, you know, brand metrics are absolutely the right thing to look at that. But I think the important thing around the brand metrics is linking those brand metrics down to the next stage of that life cycle. So what actually happens after brand awareness is this consideration. And I would imagine for selling beds, obviously Simon's the expert here, but I would imagine for selling beds, there is quite a long consideration cycle. So it's about tying those brand metrics, you know, to say actually this sponsorship was a success, into the next engagement signal that you're using, with consideration, and then ultimately purchase, and then growing that customer lifetime value.
And Simon, would you agree with that?
I totally agree with Andy. There isn't one size fits all. Interestingly, earlier this week, I was having a conversation with one of the other Team G partners. They came into the office and they were asking us, how did we measure success? Equally, I asked them the same. And I think as you go through the campaign, it's very different depending upon your position and what you're trying to achieve. You know, within a normal week, if we were just running a TV campaign, you know, we might measure that using our reach and frequency. And then we would tie in an ROI on the back of that based on our previous modelling. But every campaign does require a different approach. It's a bespoke approach each time around. And it depends on how big the campaign and how in depth the campaign is, and whether that campaign is a content amplified campaign. Is it a case you want people to give you likes in social, or just consider the page? I mean, and that's another, for our business, that's another very important piece. People very seldom click and buy. You know, we are talking about a big purchase, a considered purchase here. So in our measurement, we have to look at that whole journey and look at what do those people do in between, and how long, how many stages do people keep coming back and re-engaging? Do they go online? Do they go offline? Do they come back online? It is hugely complex. I think in our industry, we've roughly netted it out about 3 months, that consideration phase. But it's about 2 weeks when you're really in the funnel. And every business needs to look at its funnel and understand what that looks like for them.
Yeah, Matt, I can tell you what it's not. And I think I think if, as a marketer, you're still stuck on last click attribution in your management reporting, then, you know, ultimately measuring big cross-channel campaigns such as this is going to be seriously challenging. So I think the important thing is you need to accept that any retailer of any size needs to adopt a connected media approach. And as Simon says, you know, the metrics will be different dependent on the channels you choose to deliver through. And dependent on your brand and service, the level of that, the benchmark of that, is also ultimately going to be quite different as well.
And Simon, you mentioned TV as part of the partnership that you had. It's an interesting channel, obviously, because not many people are necessarily in the space. Obviously, there's been, you know, a lot of talk about TV advertising is cheaper these days. You know, there's been so much focus on social, which is obviously the hugely noisy arena for marketing. The question I'm trying to get at here is how do you think that TV campaign resonated with audiences? And in terms of the financials, was it just like right, this is a great idea and using this channel and TV, maybe more people should be in television?
Yeah, I mean, look, TV is one of the original broadcast media formats. It's a bit like going to the cinema. We still go to the cinema to watch a film, even though you can stream most online now and stuff like that. It's all about the experience. Trying to watch ads play out on your mobile phone without sound isn't quite the same. Look, I am a big advocate of TV, but I also totally understand its challenges. We've seen audience decline and that's pushed up price, and last year alone TV did see some significant price movements. But there's no other channel that gives the impact and drives reach as quickly as TV. And one of the things that we've been doing a lot, I mean, at Dreams, we geotest TV. You know, we switch on and switch off and we look at its performance. We then run our annual econometrics and we then measure that back to our geotesting. And we've been doing that ever since I've been at Dreams. We've been running these sophisticated models. We then take things a step further. In the lockdown we started this. We started working with a company called Lumen, where we've been doing attention. So looking at the cost of attention. And what we're able to see, that the cost per second across different media channels absolutely changes depending upon the channel that you're at. Now, on the outset, you may look at social and think, wow, that's really cheap, a CPM of £5 versus TV. But when you actually look at the cost per 1,000 seconds delivered, things completely change. TV requires big budgets to get into, don't get me wrong. You need the production and you need the initial startup. But when you look at the cost per 1,000 seconds, the price is actually really down there. So it's not as costly as you'd think. But then the other thing that's really important is we don't look at TV just as TV now. We look at it as AV. And that's made up from the mix of the linear TV, the broadcast VOD, and then in addition to that, you've got video formats like YouTube. And really, those channels combined give you your TV strategy. It's about getting the right mix and the right percentages per total to make sure you got the most cost-efficient delivery.
I think for us, when we're measuring with our clients the impact of, well, the more traditional channels such as, and we do TV and we do offline measurements such as magazines, that whole concept of geotesting is really key, because if you understand the reach of all the different TV channels, and you know, there are some regional TV channels and there are some non-regional, there are some UK-wide TV channels as well. As long as you've got the ability to measure that digital engagement, you know, you can get a pretty good read on the overall impact of something that's completely non-linear, such as a newspaper or a local newspaper being circulated in a particular area and a bit of PR column inches there, and the impact that actually has on a brand by actually listening to those digital signals. So I think, you know, and the way we approach it is this whole concept of total media attribution. So and that's based on a key assumption, I guess, that actually, you know, there's no single channel in this multi-channel world and this multi-channel customer. You know, there's no such thing as a linear interaction with a customer anymore. And that actually, you know, you have to look at your media spend as a whole. And as long as you understand the geo specifics of that media spend, there are the digital signals out there to be able to understand, A, the changes in behavior, and then B, the incrementality to the activity that you're running.
I mean, for us, without TV as part of our strategy for the Olympic campaign, I don't think we would have achieved the impact without it. Working with the dedicated channels and the media sponsorship that we put in place on Eurosports and so on and so forth, we just wouldn't have created that stitched together campaign. TV was the backbone of our proposition, but it wasn't the only thing that we did. you know, the content, the social, the rich engagement to reach people at the right time. And I think that's what Andy's saying. It's all about having a 360 campaign, but each of it has its own role to play. And that's what's crucially important.
Just to add to that, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, we operate primarily in the programmatic, you know, sort of arena. And, you know, I mean, what we've seen on that kind of 360 view is that, you know, it's the combination of digital out of home, the combination of connected TV, the combination of display, the combination of mobile, the combination of native, these different formats, making sure you're consistently messaging across all of them, being able to measure that and target effectively across those is ultimately what drives, you know, the best lifecycle ROI.
One of the things I'm interested about what from what you're saying, so obviously this geo testing, you know, can you talk a little bit about that, or is that giving too much of the game away?
It's very old school, and I think many big TV advertisers will have been doing this for a number of years. In simple terms, it just requires, it's predominantly done by the ITV network, because that's the only real network that you can easily break down by TV region. And all it simply means is switching off locations, allowing other locations to continue running TV. And there, what you're looking for is in the sales uplift, the variance or divergence between sales between the two regions to test and control effectively. And what that will do, when you take out the costs, you can then measure an effective return on investment. It's something I've done numerous times and in different businesses. And it's something that I imagine that most big advertisers do as a check-in. The only downside is that the geotest really applies to the relevance of the time that you do that geotest. So if something changes in the economy or something changes, then really it's based on those metrics. But the core principles are transferable. Ideally, you'd run that across every channel you do, whether it's YouTube, paid search, social. Some channels are easier to test than others, and some channels require significant scale. The problem is when you invest more in some of the digital channels, you push up the base price, and you have to account for that when you measure it on the back end. But the complexities are not that bad.
Yeah, and to Simon's point, I mean, we've actually started... Within our total media attribution framework, we've actually started putting macro and micro factors into the modeling as well. You know, so actually, you know, for instance, if we take COVID, which is, you know, quite a serious macro factor, you know, you can understand and you can see changes in behavior based on like the number of cases of COVID. So if you've got a baseline, you can actually begin to understand that, and you can feed that into the overall modeling as well. So you know, sort of I mean, we tend to use, sorry, we might be getting a bit technical here, but we tend to use a Bayesian approach to media attribution modeling. And as long as you're feeding in the right variables or the right inputs, then you know, so you can start getting the right outputs, and then more importantly, you can actually start predicting the future as well.
And I mean, this is something, would you both agree that this is something that all retailers can do, big or small? You know, even if you have a small budget, these kind of tests are things that you can actually adapt and implement into your strategy.
Yes. Anyone who advertises, I would say, should have a robust testing model in place. You know, and there are as Anne said, there's a number of digital systems that can sort of replicate some of this for you, but equally, you know, whether you're just a radio advertiser, it's very easy to geotest within, you've got a store opening in a specific location, you can run the test and then see how the store performs afterwards and before. And every advertiser should be adopting a test and learn approach.
There are 2 million businesses in the UK, and there are 1 million data scientists. So I think there's enough, you know, sort of to go around. But I mean, I think it raised an interesting point, which is actually the fact that, you know, we tend with our clients to talk more about allowing them to take more control over their measurements. So I think with the world of consent very much now on the horizon, not just to do with targeting, but also to do with measurement, the ability to take that more holistic approach when it comes to reporting is and measurement is crucially important, because you can't rely on big tech to provide you all the answers and all the attribution answers. You've really got to try and understand the impact of and the cause and effect of any of the marketing campaigns you run outside of the information that they provide, because they're providing information within their own walled garden.
And Simon, obviously, be remiss of me, we're talking on a podcast, it's an audio format, to not talk about the audio campaign that was part of the partnership as well. Can you talk a little bit about the audio as a channel and whether you see that as being an untapped space for other brands as well?
Yeah. So ultimately, part of our campaign execution was to create stories. And effectively, what we wanted to do was tell the athlete stories. So from them as little children to being Olympic champions. Now, we produced these both in hard copy print books on YouTube as an animation, but we also produced what was one of our first podcasts. We'd done previous podcasts before using sleep-related content, but this was the first sort of approach that we had. And I'll be honest, none of us knew much about podcasts when we were doing this sort of stuff. And we had to work with those people that that did it. And we found a really good agency that produced all the content for us and then published it. And it is outside of the creative aspect of developing the creative, the costs are minimal. And all you need to do is support that type of content on your social channels or your own channels, and basically listeners follow. And it was a really, really, really good part to do. And I know my two children loved listening to the stories. Every time it was like, go to bed, here you go, you can listen to their podcast of the Olympic stories that we did. And I think more people should be doing that type of stuff. I mean, we won another award for that, which was best use of content and stuff within the podcast space. So yeah, it's really, really good.
Mentioning the awards as well brings us neatly on to Dreams being named the Marketing Game Changer at the inaugural Retail Gazette Awards. And I mean, as a person who sat within the judging room for that, it was obvious that, one of the main reasons why you won was fundamentally the campaign that was built around your partnership with the Olympics, Paralympics, and obviously how it delivered such strong ROI. Obviously this is a bit of a Sophie's choice for you here, Simon. Can you share the result that you're most proud of in terms of what came out of the output of that campaign?
I mean, ultimately, we're a commercial business. The campaign delivered significant, strong results. I told you some of the brand tracking results earlier. And it proved financially good for us, hence why we've signed to Paris. I wouldn't say there was a single part of the campaign that I'm most proud of, but it's more the collective. The fact that everything came together and there was a series of parts, but it all fluidly linked together to deliver that overall strategy. But I suppose if pushed, what I would probably say is I'm most proud of the fact that this was our first time, and we are a very small team, the marketing team over at Dreams, and it was the dedication of the team and the people that played a role in it to get the job done. And there are members there that did exceptional. And to be honest, if I was being really frank, it's the team that are the heroes in delivering the campaign. I just sit there as part of it. But we delivered collectively, each playing their role. And I think for us, it was the first time that we'd, and as a business, that we'd joined on a common cause to deliver something. And overall, we won. I think we got 8 awards in total for that campaign. And one of those was a European Sponsorship Award, which was their grand prize as best sponsorship campaign. So, yeah, I think not only did we think we did well, but I think a lot of the industry specialists think that we did a great job as well.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, it's a real testament to teamwork, I think, because anybody that works in marketing is going to know how challenging, I mean, throwing COVID into the mix as well, obviously creates this completely different scenario, but it's working with such visibility and obviously in so many different channels for a campaign is super challenging.
It is. And I think what's more important is that it's not just internal, but it's with your agency partners. No campaign to this magnitude could have been delivered without the support of, you know, our sports and entertainment agency, our media partners, the internal teams, and it's everyone. And everyone comes together to deliver on an amazing output. Yeah, teamwork.
To wrap up this conversation, obviously it's the new year. There's, you know, 2023 has only just begun, but it'd be great to know from both of your points of view, what do you think the big marketing trends will be for 2023? And also it'd be good if you could share what you think some of the biggest challenges might be in the year ahead of pushing into 2024, 2025. Andy, how about we start with you?
So I think alongside the increasing ease of access to new marketing formats, such as connected TV and digital out of home that I've already mentioned. So these are big formats, TV, digital out of home or out of home, traditionally only available for big budgets. All of a sudden, you've got these larger formats available in real time, potentially for smaller budgets too. So I think it'll be alongside this increasing ease of access. I think, you know, one of the bigger marketing trends that we're going to see this year is clients having to take ownership of their measurements. And we've kind of already covered that piece. But, you know, they need to take ownership to better inform planning and targeting across the marketing landscape for the simple reason that I think one of the tools that a lot of people rely on, Google Analytics, is being switched off, or Universal Analytics is being switched off. In the middle of this year, and will be replaced by an event-based, highly configurable solution called GA4. So something I think a lot of people have relied on and only measured last-click attribution is going to be switched off. And the new technology that's going to become available will mean that people are going to have to start thinking about their measurements more holistically. I think then the other thing is that, I mean, GDPR, right, has been around for several years now, so since 2018. But certainly we're seeing more and more, you know, pressure being put on companies understanding that it's not just about targeting, it's also about measurement too. So the fact that companies are going to have to start thinking more meaningfully about how do I measure in a consented world and how do I measure if I don't have consent. These are two very, very separate challenges that I think the traditional marketeer is facing alongside the increasing height of the walled gardens that seem to be happening in the big tech environment.
And Simon, what are your kind of key trends for the year ahead and also the challenges that keep you up at night?
Sure. Well, from a retail perspective, obviously the cost of living crisis is on everyone's lips at the moment. Who knows what it will do? Because only this morning I heard on the radio that December's growth forecasts were greater than anyone had predicted. So we'll have to we'll cross that bridge as we get to it. But really, from a media perspective, I think there is now a choice paralysis. There is so many opportunities for you to reach customers. The challenge is trying to figure out which ones are right. You could spend the next year testing all these different channels and probably by the end of it not realizing if anything's worked at all. But it really is back to Andy's point about picking those key opportunities and having a really robust measurement in place. I know from my perspective, we've got a roadmap of things that we want to do. There are always those media agencies that will push you to do lots and lots of different things. But as long as you stay on the sort of keep on the right path and measure those sort of challenges and channels, then I think it is a case of putting your money where your return comes from, whatever that KPI is that you're measuring against. But yeah, there is so much choice definitely out there. And the other piece I would say that I would come back to is around optimization. So from the results that you're getting, and last year the big buzzword was attention. I still think there is a focus this year on attention and what channels are delivering the best attention depending upon what your objective is. So I think choice, optimization and measurement are the things I would focus on.
Excellent. I agree completely. Those are kind of the things that I think everybody should be focused on, and hopefully listening to this podcast will give some of our audience a really great insight into how it can be done really, really well, because I think the Dreams have been exemplary in that respect. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. You've been listening to the Retail Inside Out podcast from Retail Gazette. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to hear each episode as soon as it's delivered. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.